Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net, and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. The pre-med year, session number 181. Hello and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. This week, I'm joined by my lovely co-host one more time. Welcome back, Allison Gray.
Hi, everybody. I hope you don't mean one more time ever. That sounded really sad.
It depends on how you do today.
Isn't that so typical, Ryan? Don't you just love that?
It's conditional. Right? It's just like any performance.
Well, I'm batting like 40 for 40 so far, so I'm not too worried. And I also live here, and I know where you live.
You think you've been on 40 podcast episodes
so far? I
know,
I just kind of made that up.
Okay, that's good. Anyway, it's good to have you back. How have you been?
I've been good. Have you been?
I've been very well. Thank you. This is a little bit different. As we're recording this, we're also on Facebook Live.
Yeah, you told me about that part about 2 minutes before we started.
That works. It's fun, right?
Live.
So if you're listening to this and you're not part of the Facebook Hangout, you can go to medicalschoolhq.net/group, join our Hangout, and when we go live for future recordings, maybe, depending on how today goes, then you can watch those live as well.
Pressure's on.
Yeah. We're a little bit later tonight. We're recording this at 9:22 Mountain Time.
So I almost said Pacific time.
We're not in Pacific
time. I don't know where I live.
This is Mountain Time. So, awesome. So this is fun too, because if you're watching this, you can ask some questions of us live and maybe we'll answer them. We're going to answer some questions that were posted last week when we put out that we were going to record an episode and what people wanted to hear from us. So if you're watching and you have something new that you want to hear from us, go ahead and post. We'll be watching our comments. But let's go ahead and talk a little bit about what people wanted to hear. And I think one of the first things that popped up was that somebody wanted to hear about gap years, and that was Emily McDowell. And you took a gap year on purpose, And I took a gap year because I didn't get into medical school the first time I applied. I actually took 3 years off. So let's go ahead and talk about gap years. What was the reasoning behind why you took a gap year?
I was really burned out in school. That was one of the reasons, to be perfectly honest. I was exhausted, and I had a really rigorous undergrad program at McGill, and it was just science all the time. And I was exhausted, and I didn't think I could devote the time I needed to my application while also doing my senior year classes at school. And so that was one of the reasons. And I was watching my friend, one of my best friends in college, apply while we were in class, and it was so stressful for her. And What else? Well, I knew that I needed more clinical experience. That was part of it too. And I wanted to try a couple new things before. Oh, now I can see myself on two screens. I wanted to try doing a couple of different things that I didn't think I was going to get a chance to do once I entered medicine, once I became a medical student and went forward. And so I figured, well, this is a great opportunity. I thought it would just sort of make my application more appealing. It would add, and bulk is totally the wrong word because you don't want to add bulk to yourself. Add substance maybe to yourself.
To your application?
Yeah, and okay. just to what you've done. So I think for several reasons. And it was a really good choice for me.
As you were going through that thought process, how did you figure out that it was something you could do, that it wasn't looked upon negatively? And again, how did you figure out what to do?
Well, I remembered being in anatomy, because we actually took anatomy in undergrad, and I remember there being a TA, a teacher's aide, and she had applied, I think, twice already, and she was going to apply a third time to medical school. And the irony was she was teaching the medical students anatomy at that point.
But this was Canada.
This is... Well,
right.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
You were, like, it's good. It's harder in Canada.
It's very hard. Yeah. So she was brilliant, and this was her second time. She was going to apply a third time. Anyway, I recognized that, okay, people could do things and not go immediately into medical school from undergrad. And I guess I picked up on that at some point and started realizing, okay, well, lots of people in medical school aren't necessarily 22. They're 24 or 26. The average age is actually 24. So it's not 22 when you enter medical school or 21. So I realized that this was an option and that it really appealed to me for a lot of reasons. And I thought, I'm going to run with this. So,
what did your parents say when you said, I'm not going to go to medical school like we talked about?
My dad, I think, freaked out we had two different conversations. When I was really burned out in undergrad, I remember this really long drive we took going home from Montreal to Boston for the summer. And I was so burned out. And I said, Dad, I don't think I can do this. I don't know if I want this. And he gave me the best advice. He said, give it some time. He said, you're so tired. You're so exhausted from working so hard. Give it some time. You know this is what you want, and you just need to just take a breather, and you'll be fine. But the whole gap year thing, I think my dad has had... my dad and my mom never stopped. They went straight through school. They got their doctorates. They just... I think they went straight into PhD training, and then their doctorates from undergrad. And they never took a break. And actually, I think the longest break my mom ever took was when she took off 8 weeks to have my sister. So taking a break was not something in their generation. It was not something in their thought process. And this whole gap thing was very bizarre to them. And
for hippies.
My parents were hippies. They were hippies. Yeah.
No. Taking a gap year is for hippies.
Oh, okay. But that's funny because my parents were actually hippies for a while. But anyway, they grew up in this is like Woodstock. So when I told my dad about this idea about wanting to take a gap year, I think he was like, oh my God, does that mean she's going to like leave school and she's not going to go back? And, you know, it was like this gap could become like a permanent gap or something. And I tried to convince him, and he came around, you know, and my mom realized, you know, she just needs some time and she wants to do some other things. And what I ended up doing, my dad recognized, was really great. And then my sister went on and did a gap year, but she didn't go to med school. She went to psychology graduate school. But yeah, he came around. He came around. But it's very different. I mean, our generation and, you know, a few years ahead, a few years back, that's a brand new thing. If you think about compared to 20 years ago, that you didn't take a gap year. That's like taking a year off from your life if and obviously it's not. It's just a different way of doing things for a while. But I think for probably our parents and their parents, that's a foreign concept.
Yeah. How did you go about picking what you did during that gap year?
So I knew that I wanted a couple of different things. I'm a variety junkie, always have been. So I knew I didn't want to do one thing for the course of the year. And I had already worked in a lab all through college, clinical research project at Brigham and Women's, working for a cardiologist on a project there. And so I didn't really want to be in any kind of research setting. I really wanted to be in a clinical setting. And I knew I needed that clinical experience that I really didn't feel like I'd had enough of. And I also had thought about what my mom does, and she just retired, but she was working in a biopharmaceutical company. And I thought, well, gosh, that's such an interesting idea because they're working on drug development and trying to make patients' lives better. And then there's all this, people have all this sort of stigma about them that they're the big bad drug company. So I thought, gosh, it'd be really cool to see what it's like from the inside. And so I looked for clinical opportunities and something unique.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I think I think there is a huge trend towards going for a gap year, having students take that gap year, because as you said, it adds substance, adds bulk, as you said, to the application. It allows you, and we talked about this a lot with non-traditional students, students that are away from school, that have some experience in the real world and not just being a student. I think it allows them to grow as a person. It allows them to figure out who they are a little bit better. But I think in the end, it allows students to be better physicians. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think it gives you life experience, and that's really priceless in a sense.
I think so too. So gap years, you can do so many different things with a gap year, but there are some things that you probably should avoid doing.
Yes. Ski bumming and sitting around.
Ski bumming?
Ski bumming. That's a verb or adjective or whatever. Ski-bumming. I just made it. Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, I think what I mean by that is you don't want to, there's nothing in skiing. Skiing is awesome. You don't want to do something that's going to come across as completely just blowing off, you know, anything with a purpose. I mean, sitting around watching television all day. I think you want something that's going to add to your application, that's going to add to yourself. And it doesn't mean doing something just to fluff your application. It means doing something to make yourself a better person, make yourself a better future physician.
Yeah. If you take a gap year because you're burnt out of school and you go work at a water park, being one of those people that tells people when they can go down the water slide or not, that's not going to look very good when you go for your interviews and when they say, what did you do during your gap year?
Right.
Your gap year is meant to, yes, give you a little bit of a break from school, but also to continue in your service of others or continue in strengthening your desire to become a physician or your ability to do research or dig a little bit deeper into something that you think you may be passionate about in the future as a physician. That's what a gap year is for. It's not meant to go be a ski bum, as you said. A lot of people ask about travel during a gap year, and traveling is perfectly fine too. It might not be directly related to medicine, but traveling gives you cultural experience. Mm-hmm. and experience with different cultures, different people, different communities. And so travel is definitely a huge thing as well.
Yeah, and there are so many opportunities now to be part of a clinical endeavor in an international setting. There's so many things you can do.
Yeah.
You just don't want to appear lazy and like you don't really care what's going on and, you know.
Like a ski bum.
Yeah, or somebody who's eating bonbons all day. Yeah.
Or skiing and eating bonbons.
That might be hard and make you sick. Yes.
Okay. All right.
So what about you, though?
What about me?
Well, what did you do? You want to talk about that? You want to move on?
Oh, I thought you'd never ask. No.
I listen, I'm on the hot seat here. I better like be a good co-host, otherwise I'm going to be kicked off, you know.
I don't know if I can add anything more. So again, I didn't take a gap year because I wanted to. I took a gap year because I was forced to. And during my gap years, I actually ended up taking 3 years off between undergrad and medical school. I shadowed an orthopedic surgeon for a long time because I found out that that was one of the biggest missing pieces from my application the first time I applied. I didn't have that shadowing experience. So I did that for a while. And then I went and coached baseball at a summer camp, which has nothing to do with medicine or service of others.
But that was during a summer, right? Which is a little bit different. I mean, I was a camp counselor after college for a summer too. You know?
It was.
And then I started working at a gym as a personal trainer, and then as a fitness manager. I managed all the personal trainers, and again, not really healthcare related. It was a leadership position, so I think that helped strengthen my application.
Well, and in a certain sense, you were improving health, one goldfish at a time.
Goldfish.
Yeah, don't you know that whole thing? That whole thing, the guy's at the edge of the ocean and he's walking along and there are thousands of starfish. It's not goldfish, it's starfish. But anyway, he's walking along. See, this is why I come on the show, because I add this like a whole layer for you and I make you laugh. Okay, so he's walking along the beach and he sees all these starfish, and one by one, he's throwing the starfish back. And some guy walks up to him and he says, "What are you doing? You're never gonna, like, why are you doing that?" And he says, "One starfish at a time." The whole idea is you're helping one person at a time. You're making a difference. And you were making a difference. You were training these people. You were bettering. You were improving their health. I think that, I mean, that's not clinical experience per se, but it actually is more related to healthcare than certain other things you could have done.
Yeah. I was improving my application bigly.
Bigly. Oh, gosh.
A little Donald Trump reference in there. Gotta love.
Anyway.
The Donald. All right. So yeah, that's what I did during my gap year. It wasn't planned. It wasn't strategic. It just happened.
But I think that's a great learning point, too. You took advantage of a not so great experience, which was that you didn't get in the first time, and you made something great from it. You figured out what you were called to do at that time, what you really wanted to do, and you turned it into something really great. And you deferred 3 years, which thank you for doing that, because we might not have met if you hadn't.
Darn. Anyway.
Really? This is what I'm dealing with.
Okay. So I think it's with gap years.
Gap years are good. Just use it wisely.
Yes.
Plan it. Use it wisely.
All right. So another question came in from Samuel Franklin. Actually, 6 questions came in from him.
Cool.
But the second one was kind of interesting, especially with some recent news that you found. So we can talk about that. The question is, how do you maximize the use of the healthcare team players, meaning nurses, PAs, NPs, pharmacists, respiratory therapists, so the rest of the staff members, your colleagues, the ancillary staff? How do you maximize that experience?
And in general, or during medical school? In general,
let's talk about in general, and then maybe we can talk about medical school.
Okay. So I think we've talked about the whole concept of team in healthcare quite a bit on the show. And
which is why we talk about collaboration, not competition, yeah, right? Start that early.
Absolutely. So your healthcare team is everything. I think that gone are the days of being in a small private practice with one doctor and no staff. And, you know, I mean, they actually still do house calls in some parts of the United States, but those are few and far between. If you look around, the great majority of physicians are practicing in a team environment, whether that's in a hospital, whether that's in a clinic, and your team is invaluable. I have worked with lots of different teams I've worked in a lot of different hospitals throughout my training, and then started my career. And I've worked in office settings and hospital settings and private practice and government settings and HMOs. And I can tell you that everywhere I've gone, the strength of your ability to practice well, a huge function of that is how well your team works together. And so as a physician, you are the leader of that team. And if you have other colleagues who are physicians working with you, you are all the leaders. And I've never, ever thought of myself as, you know, the head honcho, the most important one. It's just not how I function. I really try to...
Isn't that why you became a physician, though?
No. And I think, and we've talked about this too. I didn't become a physician to be some big head honcho, some big shot. I became a physician to take care of patients and to make the, you know, improve the health of my community. But I think there are people out there who view a physician as, oh, you know, you're the leader, you're the boss, you know, you tell everybody else what to do. And it's just so not the case. I think if you go in with that attitude, you're going to be really disappointed, because the success of the healthcare you provide really relies on a team effort involving you as a physician, your nurses working with you, your LPNs or medical assistants working with you, your pharmacists working with you. It's a collaborative environment where each person's role is so important. I can't even tell you all the ways in which the staff whom I work with on a daily basis improve the healthcare of my patients, make my life easier every day. It's you know, every moment of the day, my LPN. And also, you know, I have so much fun with the people I work with. I love the people I work with. So the idea to me of being off in some place, you know, is the physician sort of all by themselves. I mean, it would be sad. I would be miserable. I think so. I guess my punchline, what I'm getting at, is you want to learn how to be a team player as early as you can be, and learn your role and how your role works with the roles of those other people on your team, and how you can best function and how you can best lead them and serve, you know, their needs, and in return get what you need from them by communication, by honesty, by working together, by having a positive attitude. It will make or break your experience as a physician.
I don't think I heard a specific word that I was looking for, but respect, I think, is a huge thing.
Oh, absolutely. As a physician, if I didn't convey that, absolutely.
As a physician, I think you get some physicians, as soon as they get that MD or DO after their name, get this air about them that they are the physician, and they don't respect the nurses, they don't respect the PAs, the NPs, because they're the physician.
Yeah, they're going to find out real quick that that's not going to work once they become interns. But
do you have any good stories with
oh, sure,
teams going south?
Yeah, well, I thought you meant just about, I mean...
Or physicians that are arrogant and...
So the nurses know right away who the interns are, who come in and who act a certain way. I mean, I remember, sure, from my residency, there were particular interns who acted very righteous or very self-serving or very know-it-all. And I remember one intern trying to sort of tell a team of, you know, neuro ICU nurses who'd been doing their job for over 20 years and sort of, you know, try to explain to them how something worked, you know, anatomically. And I mean, it was just silly. And it was so insulting the way he was talking to them. And nurses... You know, they're not even, why should anybody stand for that? You know, I mean, who are you to come in with no experience, essentially? I mean, 4 years of medical school, but no clinical experience with patients, and try to run the show and tell people what's what. That's not your role. Your role is to learn. And so having respect for people who've been in their role for 25, 30 years, even if they don't have an MD or a DO, but they are an RN or they are PA or an NP or a PharmD, and they have a lot more experience than you. You have to respect that from the minute you walk in the door. Because if you don't, you will be blacklisted. People will not like working with you, and it'll make your life miserable. It's the thing you want to do is make friends right away and respect. Learn your place and respect. Earn your dues. And if you work hard and you're a team player, when you get to that other side and you are the chief resident and you're running the show, you will have earned your place. You will have earned that respect, and you will love your job, because people will. And also, they'll get you what you need. You know, you're running a code, and or you're crashing someone to the OR, and you need that support. That support's going to be there for you. But if you make, you know, a muckery of it at the beginning, it's, you know, it's just not going to be easy. And I did see that happen, and it's unfortunate. And you know, I think you can come back from. I mean, we all make mistakes, but you know, you want to just start on a good foot.
I think we've both had experiences on the flip side before we have that degree as medical students, and kind of being the brunt of the attitude from the staff.
Oh yeah, you remember me crying in your car that day?
With nurses and other staff members and physicians as well. Mm-hmm. That you're just the medical student and they don't respect you, and they put you in your place. And mine was the one that comes to mind for me wasn't a big deal, but I happen to be pretty good with finding veins, right, and drawing blood. And I was working in OB, my OB rotation, and there was a female there that was pregnant, and the nurses couldn't get a stick on her. They couldn't start an IV on her. And so I walk over there and my short white coat and I start poking on the lady, like tapping her arm, trying to figure out where the veins are, and I'm getting dirty looks from the nurses, and I said I won't try. I'm just feeling around, just kind of exploring and trying to learn. And I felt an amazing vein. It wasn't a very superficial vein. You couldn't see it very well, but it was there. And I said, "This is a vein. You go for it. I don't want to do it." And the nurses went for it and they got it. But they kind of scoffed at me, like, "Who are you, stupid medical student?" Because I'm sure that there were medical students before me that thought they were all that and weren't, and set a bad reputation for us medical students. But you had one specifically too.
Mm-hmm. I was a third year and on my internal medicine rotation, and oh gosh, I had this patient who was talking to me and complaining about how awful she thought her nurse was. And I actually thought this nurse was pretty good and nice woman. But she just was complaining. And just, I think she wanted her to give her more medication or something. And she said, "Please, you know, you've got to help me find another nurse." And I made this comment at the time, which I thought was pretty innocuous. And I was just trying to basically pacify the situation and help the patient, you know, reassure her and try to figure out something to say to make her feel better, when in reality, I can't get her a new nurse, right? The nurses are assigned a set of different patients during the day. So I made this comment to her and I said, "Well, maybe on the next shift you'll have a different nurse." And lo and behold, a second later, the curtain, because this was an old school room, and so there was a curtain in between the two patients, like absolutely no privacy. The curtain was flung open, and who was right behind it but the patient's nurse? And wow. So she went off on me. I mean, my God. So she started to in front of the patient, and then I sort of walked out because I was so embarrassed already. She took me into, I shouldn't have followed her, but she took me into basically the medication room, and she just lit into me. And I was horrified. I was mortified. I felt horrible. I was trying to do a good thing. I actually respected this nurse, and I just made this comment. And I remember I was so angry. It was the end of the day, and I got in the car. Ryan picked me up, and I just bawled my eyes out. But you know, that was good. I look back on that now as a moment that made me stronger, because I actually decided after that moment that I wasn't going to take any lip from anybody. And I, yes, you will have attendings and people who are your superiors who will talk down to you sometimes and who will say things to you that maybe you don't always appreciate. But I decided that I was not going to stand there and let somebody scream at me in a professional setting ever again. And so I've had other incidents, you know, through my training and my career where someone has started to try to talk to me that way. And I've just, you know, said very calmly, "Please don't speak to me that way. This is not appropriate." And honestly, no, I really learned a lot about how to sort of get my own back, how to take care of myself, because no one should ever have to be, you know, I don't know, screamed at like that. It's not professional, period. I don't care who you are. It's not professional. Yeah. Anyway, it was a moment. You know, you'll have a lot of those moments in training that thicken your skin, that make you stronger. And so it wasn't such a bad thing. But I think the culture of medicine, the long, you know, tradition of medicine, there's this pimping, and there's this pimping meaning when attendings ask you questions that you may not know the answers to. And there's this sort of hierarchical training that we may never quite get away from. And maybe that's not such a bad thing, but you may have not great moments. And again, it's just trying to rise above it, not ever lose your cool and become unprofessional yourself, because that can haunt you. I know stories of residents who tried to go after attendings and they were blacklisted at the hospital.
Even in the news recently with that neurology resident in Miami.
That was really sad. Yeah, for those of you who don't know the story, this resident, I guess, got really drunk and got into this fight with an Uber driver, and it was unfortunately all over YouTube, and she lost her job. And yeah. So, I mean, you never want to act in a way where if you are caught on camera. And these days, I mean, gosh, yeah, you can't anywhere get away with anything.
In the hospital, out of the hospital.
We're on live TV right now. So you always want to try to be a good person, rise above, keep your head held high, but earn your dues and show respect.
Yeah. Awesome. So I think there were a lot more questions. I don't think they were very good. They were great questions, but not great to answer here. But a couple people have asked some questions that we can follow up with on the show, which is awesome. So again, we're live in the Hangout doing this, our first time live in the Hangout. Hello, everybody. If you aren't in the Hangout, go to medicalschoolhq.net/group, and you can watch the video of Allison dancing right there. But what you can do is when we're recording these live, you can ask questions. And so we had a couple questions here. Let me refresh.
Yeah, it's cool to see people hanging out with us. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. So Ahmed said, unusual question, what type of career would you guys do if not in healthcare or doctors? Or if you weren't a doctor or not in healthcare? This is like a medical school interview question.
Okay, well, I can answer that really easily. But does it require that you have the talent to do such job, I guess?
Yes.
And it does, it's not in healthcare, right?
Not in healthcare.
Yeah, I would be on Broadway. Yeah, that was easy.
Again, like as the concessions person?
Yeah, so you know what? That's really nice. No, I danced all my childhood and I wanted to be a professional dancer. And I love how you laugh. You know, it's like if I laughed at you playing baseball, it's just awesome. Wow. Anyway, I love to dance. It was my thing. I did ballet and jazz and modern and I loved it. And I was that kid who was like singing and did theater and dance. I had no idea when it came to sports. My parents wouldn't let me either because they thought that it would like interfere with my studies.
Or cause a brain damage.
Yeah,
brain damage. Very
true.
That
I would get like conked on the head and suffer brain damage. Yeah, so which I probably would have because I couldn't catch anything. But I was the manager of my boys lacrosse team in high school, which is kind of cool. Anyway, I love to dance, and I actually wrote my personal statement. I think for college or was it even med school? At some point I realized that I really needed a lot of intellectual stimulation. I didn't think that I was going to get what I wanted kind of, being a dancer. And I mean, the reality is, do I think that I have the talent? I'm not delusional. No. I mean, I think I can sing. I think I can dance, but you know, yeah, but right. Anyway,
so
but
Broadway.
Yeah.
Good.
I still, I sing in the car and just fantasize some days.
I think I would be in computer programming.
See, but that's not like a fun answer. Like, you wouldn't be like a baseball player or something?
No, because I don't have the skills to be a professional baseball player.
Okay, fine. Well, now I have to answer the question for real. Okay, so what would I do? Gosh, that's really hard. Because here's the deal. So Ryan is very multi-talented if you haven't met him and gotten to know him in person. So like he builds computers, he builds software, he's a photographer, he has this business. I mean, he's a coach. He does a lot of different things. He's talented in a lot of different ways. And I don't know. When I look around, like
you're an amazing neurologist.
That's very awesome of you. But so I guess I'm a little like stuck. I don't know. Do you know what I would do?
No, that just means that you're meant for this.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I really like this question. It's given me some things to think about because clearly I don't know the answer.
Ahmed also asked if doing your undergrad at McGill was a disadvantage for your applications to med school.
Yes and no. Yes, because my GPA was probably lower than it would have been because it was insanely hard and such a rigorous science curriculum. And the way the grades were weighted at McGill, it was really, really hard to do well. I mean, it was hard to get an A. And actually, I learned later on that a lot of the United States citizens who were in school for undergrad in Canada, who then applied to medical school in the United States, their GPAs were lower on average than a lot of people. And again, McGill's the Harvard of Canada. It's a great school. It's not, you know, but the GPAs were lower. And so that probably, you know, my application wasn't quite as strong as it could have been. I had a good GPA, but it could have been better. And also because the advising, but the reality of that is that there's bad advising everywhere. But yep. I went to a place where a lot of the advising was focused on Canadian students, rightfully so, because most of their students were Canadian. Only 15% of the class was from the United States, and only a small percentage of those folks were going for pre-med. So, yeah, I think probably it did. But it also really, I wouldn't change anything. I think it was great and added a different, you know, it made me more unique.
Okay.
What about you? Oh, you didn't go to McGill.
I didn't go to McGill. Yeah.
That's true.
Good job.
Yeah.
Crystal asked, how do you balance work-life aspect during these years? I'm assuming medical school years or even residency. How do you stay grounded with everything that was happening?
Okay. Is that for me or why don't you go first?
No, I don't. I think at that point, in your training, there is no work-life balance. I think it's all one big melting pot of fun.
True, but you do talk about the importance of exercise and eating well. And...
Correct. But I think that lends itself towards kind of, again, it's just all one big pot and you need to just do whatever you need to do to stay sane, and exercise and eating well as part of that. I think obviously we went through it without kids. I think if we had children during that time, I think the answer would be different, because then you're forced to set aside family time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as we went through it...
Well, your children are your priority, right?
Correct.
Your family, yeah.
But as we went through it, we didn't have that. And so we were able to... And both of us going through it, we were able to support each other. We knew what each other were going through. But if one person is a physician and one person isn't, it's harder to have that dynamic. So maybe, again, you have to set aside some time. But I think it was easier with kind of a dual physician household.
Yeah, and I think for us, and that's, I think, a really personal decision. I mean, a friend of mine from college who went to med school, she's an ER doc now, she wanted nothing to do with, you know, someone who was going to be a physician as her partner. She wanted a guy who was going to be doing something completely different, so that when they got home at the end of the day, they were not going to be talking about medicine. And there are probably some benefits to that too, because maybe if you're a doctor, then your non-doctor husband or wife or a partner can be sort of picking up things or doing things when you're not able to, like when you're on call overnight or on the weekend. But for us, yes, I mean, having you understand every minute what I was going through was huge for us. That was huge. So I think, and you know, there's that expression, eat when you can, sleep when you can, and don't beep with the pancreas.
Don't F with the pancreas.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's PC. Okay. FCC allowed. yes, that's very true. It's so true. There's this whole, you do everything you have to. You do. You eat when you can, you sleep when you can. And yeah, I mean, the pancreas, if you're a neurologist, that doesn't really factor in very much. But if you're a surgeon, it matters. But yes, you think you're in survival mode is really what it is. You know, and if you have kids, yeah, I mean, whole different considerations. I mean, I knew that I wasn't ready to have kids until we finished training because of that. I saw people go through it and it was amazing to watch, but I needed to focus on taking care of myself because that was challenging enough, you know, at the time. But you can do it, you know. It's like my sister asks me, how do you learn to live on such little sleep? How do you do that? How do you do that sleep deprivation stuff? And I said, you don't sit up one day or stand up and say, okay, today, body, we're going to learn how to, no, you just do it. You just go and you do it, and your body will adapt, and your mind will adapt, and you will just figure it out.
That you will. Awesome.
What else you got?
I think that's it. We have some other questions, but I think we're at a good time to end it here. We can answer more questions maybe after the recording or just in comments, but I loved this. Did you like this?
Yeah, it was fun. Am I coming back though? I don't know. You gave me all that pressure at the beginning.
So if you're listening to this, medicalschoolhq.net/181, or just go to the Facebook group, the Hangout, medicalschoolhq.net/group, and comment and let us know if Alshin should come back.
That is terrible. I think what he meant to say was, let us know if you like the show. That's really...
No, I meant let us know if Alshin should come back. We'll leave it up to you guys.
All right, well, thanks everyone. It was nice knowing you.
Based on all the comments that come in, I think they'll want you back.
I love being on the show. I love talking with you, and I love talking with everyone and imparting any help and anything I can to make anybody out there's life a little easier and their journey a little easier.
So I want to talk about the sponsor for today's show, Elite Medical Scribes. Have you ever worked with a scribe?
Oh, I've seen their work. I mean, when I'm, you know, if I'm writing or not writing, if I'm reading notes that came from the ED, the emergency room, and I'll see scribed by such and such.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
That's interesting.
And I've seen that also with primary care physicians sometimes, scribing on behalf of, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Are you jealous when you read that? Like, I wish somebody else would do my notes and charting for me?
No, because I'm so like anal about stuff like that. Like I need to, you know, I need to document the way I want. I mean, look, you were laughing at me because I was editing my transcriptions for commas. I mean, I can be insane sometimes. So I've stopped doing that. But anyway, I don't think so. But I think for ER docs and for primary care docs, that's huge. I mean, that's such a helpful thing.
As you were going through your pre-med years, I think I would have loved to be a scribe.
Oh my God, I would have loved it. I was like a sponge. I wanted any clinical experience where I could be with patients and learn. And oh yeah.
Yeah. And we had a guest on the show back, I think it was 171 with Christine, who was the former admissions, the dean of admissions at UC Irvine, who said lack of clinical experience is the big, one of the, her biggest reason for students not getting an acceptance. And she specifically said, being a scribe is one of the best ways to get that clinical experience. So if you're looking for something to do to get that clinical experience, check out Elite Medical Scribes. Go to medicalschoolhq.net/EMS. Again, that's Elite Medical Scribes at medicalschoolhq.net/EMS. And that'll take you to a list of all of their careers that they have available that you can apply to. And it's an amazing experience. You're working. We talked about teams earlier. You're part of that healthcare team as a scribe. You're in the room. You're interacting with the physician, with whoever else is there, making sure that the patient's charts are complete and done properly. So again, Elite Medical Scribes, thank you for sponsoring the show.
Yes, thank you.
Go check them out, medicalschoolhq.net/EMS. Any last minute parting words of wisdom?
Keep your head high. Keep going. Struggle through. You can do
keep
it.
Keep your chin up.
Seriously.
All right.
There are some cliches that are like kind of annoying and just cliche, but then there are some that are actually, you know, just hang in there. It will get better. You know, one of my favorite things that I talk to, I tell myself all the time when I'm having a hard day or when I'm having a hard, you know, time or whatever, is this too shall pass. So whatever you're going through right now, if it's studying for the MCAT, if it's working on your, well, you wouldn't be working on your application now, right? Oh, no, you might. Yeah, no. Totally. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm like forgetting what time it is.
Application
when
season.
It is. I know. It's like May already. Ridiculous. Yes. If you're working on your application, if you are trying to figure out if you should take a gap year or you're working on graduating college or you're a non-trad and you're thinking about changing careers, and it feels hard and like you're not going to get out of it, just remind yourself that if you keep pushing, you keep striving, you keep working hard, whatever the hard stuff it is that you're going through, this too shall pass.
Hug a bear.
Yeah, that's your way of saying it.
Yeah. I learned that.
That's the military.
I learned that from my first military experience. I don't think it's a military thing. It's just one of the people that I was there with had a saying that, anybody can hug a bear for 5 seconds. And
I don't know if the dude in the reverend could. That didn't end so well for him.
But you hug a bear for 5 seconds, and then you hug it for 5 more seconds, and you hug it for 5 more. And you get through it. This too shall pass, like you said.
Yes.
So I do want to take a minute and thank a couple people that left us ratings and reviews. If you haven't done so, we are, I think, two 5-star ratings short of 400 5-star ratings.
That is so awesome.
Which is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's incredible.
But we have Didi Schmidt, or Mama Didi Schmidt. That's Danielle. Thank you, Danielle. Who says, wind beneath my wings. That's awesome. This has been the greatest gift to have discovered as a crazy non-traditional mom. There you go. There's an imam.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Danielle.
Thanks, Danielle,
for that. We have a Spiro, who says, an excellent pre-med resource. Thank you, Spiro, for that. Some great reviews, really long ones. I'm not reading them. M. Clavijo 92. I'm sorry, I butchered that probably. Says, great podcast, an amazing podcast that has answered so many inquiries that I have had throughout my pre-medicine years. That's what we are here for. Again, medicalschoolhq.net/iTunes if you haven't left us a rating and review. I want to thank everybody for taking the time out of their busy schedule to listen to us, and for everybody watching us live right now on Facebook Live. Thank you, and we're waving. And as always, I hope you join us next week here at the Medical School Headquarters and the Pre-Med Years podcast.